This evening is Rabban Lichtenstein's Yahrzeit, Zecher Tzadik Levracha. And we're combining that also with the Rav's Yahrzeit, which was Chol HaMoed Pesach. I'm just going to begin with Rabban Lichtenstein. They were, in many respects, so similar and so different. First, this is their similarity. Rabban Lichtenstein was a genius. So was the Rav. That is an understatement. Reb Gershon Zaks, who is an Einikel, grandson of the Chafetz Chaim, his wife told me years ago that when Reb Lichtenstein was in Chaim Berlin, so everybody said that there was, she said, my brother-in-law, Reb Hillel Zaks, was known as being a bit beyond everybody else. She said, except for one person, everybody knew that the biggest genius, the biggest Talmid Chacham, was Rabban Lichtenstein. This is what she told me. The other quality I'm just going to mention about Rabban was, which was so striking, was his extraordinary humility. In the world we're living in now, humility is, it's a phrase that has gone completely out of disuse. But Rabban Lichtenstein would stand online when we're waiting for in the cafeteria. I imagine the same in the yeshiva. He would wait in line with all the boys. Would never go in front of the line. People, of course, said, "Please, Rebbe." No, he'd just wait online, like everybody else. But of course, he wasn't like everybody else. So I'm just going to tell a story now, just about the Rav, which I'd heard from before. Reb Gershon Zaks, quoting Zaks again, told me once that the Rav was the Rav in Moriah, which was a shul on the west side. He would come there, not sure how often, maybe once, spent Shabbos there once a month, Shabbos Mavochim, okay, right. So, but often, whenever he would come, he would get together in Reb Mendel Zaks was the Chofetz Chaim's son-in-law, together with Rabban Kotler, who also lived on the west side at the time. And they would get together. Reb Gershon told me that he heard from his father, Reb Mendel, they were talking hours and learning. And I know from the Rav, he had tremendous respect for Rabban. Rebbe Lichtenstein told me that the one he respected the most, this is what she did, was Rabban. But Reb Gershon said when they were talking learning for hours, he said, Reb Mendel says, the Rav was always right. So I just want to speak about another, and then I want to give it just to say a brief about Torah. Another quality, of course, that they both had was that they both confronted the contemporary scene, not just isolated within the Dalet Amos of Halacha. And that was absolutely critical. People don't recognize it at the time. But the Rav and Rabban Lichtenstein served as a model for the modern American Jew. When the Rav came to America, there were no day schools, maybe one in New York, but throughout the country there weren't. The first one to establish a day school, Maimonides, was the Rav. And he served, therefore, also as a model for the American Jew, who, the academic, that terms of not only loyalty to Torah, but his keen mind and risk. The Rav thought also the Derech of Chaim in terms of categorization lent itself to the inquisitive American Orthodox intellectual, and maybe not necessarily Orthodox. And it was not that served as a model, and it saved American Jewry. I was once with the Rav, and the Rav used to give shiur in Boston, and somebody, I didn't know who it was, he came, and the Rav gave him a tour of Maimonides. And the Rav said that if I get Olam Haba, I'm going to get it for two things, for my family and for Maimonides. And so in this sense, Rav Aaron and the Rav served as a model for the modern American Jew. And absent them, it was really therefore served as a foundation for the ultimate growth of Torah in America. And both of them, both Rabban and the Rav, had an appreciation for the complexity of human existence and also the American experience. They always live within the tension of polar experiences. It's inherent to the Brisket Derech, the two halachas, but both of them represented that, and their integrity, their brilliance. You mentioned Rabban's closeness to Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. He seems to like a Talmid lifnei Maror, and in fact, when Reb Shlomo Zalman passed away, Rabban lichtenstein taught kriya for him. But I always thought, the similarity, the extraordinary personality, the humility, the concern for others, and that those qualities are just irreplaceable. The Rav was a very imposing personality. Rabban was much more soft-spoken, but both of them had this enormous concern for the individual, and that's why they're really, aside from the genius, those qualities of interacting with the general population. I know Rabbi Dr. Berman just entered the president of Yeshiva University. For the Rav, Yeshiva University meant so much to him. It was both for the ideological reasons that we spoke about in terms of connecting to the broad society. But I remember there were once there were people who came to some Talmidei Chachamim from a different yeshiva who used to come to the Rav Shir. And the Rav heard they were reluctant to come into YU to hear the Shir. The Rav said, "If yeshiva's treif, then I'm treif." Heard it from him. And he loved the yeshiva. It meant so much to him. But I think it meant a lot on many, many levels. So, but of course, what the Rav was primarily, as he used to say, "Vos binich, I'm just a malamed." But he was quite a malamed. The Rav could hold you in his grasp literally for hours. Yahrzeit Shir, this was almost a routine. After like 3 hours, do you want to hear more? He didn't wait for the response. He said, "Okay," and he just his koach hasbara, his presentation, and his you know the there was just he was really without peer. So I wanted to just today I wanted to say a brief Dvar Torah. It's related to Pesach, but I chose it because this was something that I'd said. It's based on something that the Rav said, and I wrote it with Rabban Lichtenstein. He was always so generous. He wrote back his, what he said. Said something. He said similar, and I have this in my sefer, my second sefer. So I wanted to just begin with this idea. This kind of lezichron show both the Rav and Rabban Tzadikim Levrochem. The question I want to deal with is, we know that the Loch is, the Gemara says, that if a person missed the time of Musaf earlier, that he davens Mincha first, and then he davens Musaf afterwards. The Gemara says, because Todav She'enu Todav Todav Kol. Mincha is more often, and therefore takes precedence. What bothered me always about this halacha is this halacha that in the Beis Hamikdash, you weren't allowed to offer a korban before. The first korban was the korban of Tamashil Shachar, and the concluding korban of the day was the Tamashil Ben Arbayim. And you weren't supposed to offer a korban after. Alei HaShem Kol HaKorbanos Kulam, with the exception of Pesach, for the korban Pesach. What we know that the Karbonos, excuse me, the Tefillos that we daven every day correspond to the Karbonos in the Beis HaMikdash. So what indeed did they do when it came to the Karbonos in the Beis HaMikdash? So presumably, in the Beis HaMikdash, in this circumstance, for some reason, this circumstance would arise, for sure, they would offer the Musaf before the Tamid Shel Ben Arbayim, because the Tamid Shel Ben Arbayim had to be the last korban. And since the tefillos connected korbanos kibbutz, they sh we should it should correspond to the avodah of the Beis HaMikdash. So what I suggested to Abraham, this is what our correspondence was about. He had some raya about this. He decided that he once spoke to Rav Shizgal at a chasna about this very issue. So if you look in the Lashon of Rambam, the Rambam distinguishes between offering a korban before the Tomei Shel Shachar and offering a korban after the Tomei Shel Baal HaBayim. The Rambam's language is Tomei Shel Baal HaBayim shochten also mishiyarach atzel v'yukol hakol sheherech u'mishesh shos u'machzumah. The Tomei Shel Baal HaBayim, and that's why our tefillos for Minchas at that time, come from 12:30 on till the end of the day. V'lo hayu shochten also b'chol yom ela b'shmona shos u'machzumah. But actually, in terms of implementing it, it was eight and a half hours into the day, which is 2:30. The korov b'teishu and we offered for the next hour. The lama arichno sheishtos achat chilas manchilot minei hakabonu sheyachidim oshel tshibu, and they postponed it so the people can bring their kabonis, because after that you couldn't bring kabonis. And then the Ram continues. But when it speaks about the Tamid Shel Shachar, he says, he says, Lefisha also lahakriv korban klal kodim Tamid Shel Shachar, velo shochtim korban achat Tamid Shel Baal HaBayim. You see, the Rambam is distinguished between the language of not offering a korban before the Tamid Shel Shachar. The Rambam says it's also to be makriv before the Tamid. And then by the Tamid Shel Baal HaBayim, he says, doesn't say also. He says, "V'lo shochtim korban achat Tamid Shel Baal HaBayim." So you see, the Ram distinguished between the Tamid Shel Shachar and the Tamid Shel Baal HaBayim. In terms of the Tamid Shel, the prohibition to offer a korban after the Tamid Shel Baal HaBayim, I heard from the Rav. He had a kiva. He said, "This is my machlokes was." I'll just briefly demonstrate. He said that it is the halacha that you're not allowed to bring a korban after the concluding korban in the Tamid Shel Baal. Is it that it's also to bring a korban, or no? That since the Tamid Shel Baal HaBayim is supposed to be the last korban, it's a chesaron and a deficiency in the Tamid Shel Baal HaBayim because it won't be the last korban, but it's not an iser. So the Rav's quoted that in the Rambam it seems that it's a loch in the kima of the Talmud, because the Rambam, this machlokes Rambam and the Ramban says explicitly that it's also to be makriv, and the Rav had tosafot in them, and I'll go through all of them. It's short that say that it's also, but in the Rambam in the Sefer Mitzvos does not count, and the Ramban is bothered by it. He doesn't count this halacha that it's also to bring a korban after the Tamid Shel Baal HaBayim. So the Rav said, and Rav Pella in his commentary on the Rav Sadia Gaon Sefer Mitzvah says the Rambam doesn't count it because it's included under, it's subsumed under halacha of bringing the Tamid Shel Baal HaBayim. It's halacha in the kima of Tamid Shel Baal HaBayim. So it's not a separate issue, and therefore it's not counted in the minyan mitzvahs. The Ramban, who indeed counts it in the minyan mitzvahs, thinks that what? That it's also to be vakif afterwards. Matter of fact, Reb Yitzchok Chanan in his Tshuvos says this is a shaila that comes up, that let's say a person is davening, he came a little late, so he's davening Shachris, and the tzibur is up to Musaf. So should he daven, should he, when he gets to his tefillah, meaning Samech Gula tefillah, should he daven Shachris or should he daven Musaf? So Yitzchok Chanan, come back to why you all the time, right? Yitzchok Chanan and his tshuva says that he thinks that you should daven musaf so that you'll have a kima tefillah b'tzibur together with tzibur. And the Rav said in name of his father, quoting Reb Chaim, that Reb Chaim thought otherwise. Reb Chaim thought you should daven shachris and there's a kima tefillah b'tzibur, even if it's as long as it's b'tzibur, even if it's not the identical Shemoneh Esrei that the tzibur is saying. So if I'm daven shachris and they're daven musaf, I still have the kima tefillah b'tzibur. Actually, in the Igros Moshe, Rav Moshe disagrees with this psak also of Rav Yitzchak Elchanan. So I was thinking, in terms of this question, that there's a, that the halacha of, if you say it's a kiyum in the Tamei Shel Ben Avayim, it's halacha in the Seder Avoda of the Beis Hamikdash that the last korban has to be what? The Tamei Shel Ben Avayim. But when we daven, we're not the Beis Hamikdash, right? So we this in a person's in the, his personal tefillos or in a tzibur, there's no seder. That's only possible in the seder hayom in avod in the Beis Hamikdash. After all, I could daven mincha, right? And somebody else may be davening, you know, a different tefillah after I daven mincha. Would you say, well, I daven mincha, so the, that's the end. The korban has been offered. That's of course not true. That's only shaykh in the Beis Hamikdash. But as it relates to the Tamei Shel Shachar, as I said, the Tamei Shel Shachar is a loch of what? Of, that is also to be makriv. And indeed, there's machloikas rishonim in terms of the original chakira. There's machloikas rishonim. What if you did bring a korban after the Tamei Shel Ben Avayim? Is that korban possible? Toisus in Menachos is the opinion that it actually is possible, unless to, you know, extenuating circumstances. It's because it's Pesach, which is permitted, and you're allowed also to bring Karbonos, it's some Chusa Kippurim, to not enable a person to bring it, but the individual, that's, he doesn't have that halacha that he sets up the Seder Avoda. But if it came to Shachar, coming back to Yitzchak Elchanan's Tshuva, I would say otherwise, you can't daven if the Tzibur is davening, if Musaf, and you should daven Musaf before Shachar, that's different than davening than the Tamei Shel Ben Avayim, because it's forbidden to daven before Shachar. That's what the Rambam says also. So then you would not daven Musaf before you daven Shachar. So, in conclusion, I just want to come back to Rabban Lichtenstein. This is his short side today. Both the Rav and Rabban had this notion, this things weren't so easy. They weren't trivial answers. There was maybe, as I said, maybe a derivative of the Brisker Derech, but they saw complexity in everything, and they tried to confront both the complex social and situation of the American Jew, but also in learning as well. And Tova, the Rebbe Lichtenstein once told me that I think it was Purim, and there was some inebriated student, Tom had asked Rabban something, and Rabban, you know, gave him a nuanced answer, which was his derech. And so he says, you know, whenever I speak to you, it's always on this hand, on the other hand, why don't I get a straight answer? So the answer is, that was Rabban, that was the Rav also. They saw the complexity in situations, and with their extraordinary integrity and commitment, they tried to balance that. And their loss is so enormous, but their memory and the significant impact they had on American Jewry, indeed world Jewry, is enormous. I just conclude this. I remember I was once in Boston with the Rav and Rav Lichtenstein, and we were flying back. We were flying, what was the airline that gave a bit of the clergy discount? I remember the Rav said no, because we said maybe we should go to a different, no, this is the one that has the discount. But so on the plane, Rabban told me that he was thinking of going to Israel, and he told me about Rabbi Mital and the yeshiva. I'd never heard about Rabbi Mital before, after I discovered what an extraordinary personality he was. I remember thinking to myself, this is absolutely crazy, you know, because he was going, in terms of his impact that was going to have on American Jewry. Of course, I didn't have the chutzpah to say anything, but I'm not the only one who had that notion. The Rav was also had that notion. It took a long time to get around to acknowledging that. But even that Rabban left, you know, it's no secret that the Rav was very, very opposed to their leaving. I also could maybe want to be a successor, but also on a personal level. But and ultimately, he accommodated himself. I remember once this, I think it must have been Yom HaTzimut, it was during one of the wars, and he said so proudly, my grandson, I assume he's speaking about Moshe Lichtenstein, is serving in the army right now. But he was very proud. And of course, even this, as I said, this nuance reflected in the Rav, in terms of his attitude towards the state of Israel. I've written a lot about that, but how important it is. But this nuance was always there, and it was based on this his integrity, his extraordinary insight, and ability to confront the complexity of different situations. He's a blah, blah, blah.